It's Physical Therapy Day. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you know our guests by now are here to help you out with your aches and pains, to welcome your physical therapy stories. It's the Physical Therapy Sisters. Lori Tyne Brody is a physical therapist and partner at Start Strong Physical Therapy, alongside her sister Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori is also a professor at Rocky Mountain University of Health Professionals. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and Start Strong Physical Therapy online at startstrongpt.com. Jill, welcome back.
It's great to be here on this nice sunny day.
Beautiful day to get out and get moving. Lori,
yes.
Welcome to you.
Thank you. It's a spectacular day to be out there. I hope everyone gets out and gets a little exercise today.
And you are welcome to the show at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So let's start with some things that could keep you from getting out and getting moving today. And the top of my list would probably be arthritis. Mm-hmm. And the top of the list of arthritis is osteoarthritis. You've brought a study today from the Journal of Orthopedic and Sports Physical Therapy that takes a look at knee osteoarthritis. But let's start with the basics here and just an explanation of what osteoarthritis is.
So that's a great question. There are many arthritises, as you alluded to, Lee, and osteoarthritis is not a systemic disease like rheumatoid arthritis is. It impacts one joint. Having said that, you could have osteoarthritis in multiple joints. So, but osteoarthritis is wear and tear of the joint space between the two bones that make the joint. So you can have non-traumatic osteoarthritis, which means that it's just wear and tear, and over the years, because of malalignment, improper loading, something like that, you've developed some osteoarthritis. The joint space becomes narrower. You might get some fissuring or little tiny microscopic cuts in your bones, things like that. You can also get what we call post-traumatic osteoarthritis, which is when you have had some sort of injury in your history that basically works as an accelerant to create osteoarthritis. So what we know, unfortunately, about individuals who have torn their ACL, mm-hmm. anterior cruciate ligament, and have even gone on to have an ACL reconstruction, within about 10 to 12 years, radiographically, they show arthritic changes in that knee. So that's what we would call post-traumatic osteoarthritis. So you can get it a couple different ways.
The symptoms of osteoarthritis. Mm-hmm. How would you know that it's coming on?
Correct. So it's usually pain with weight bearing and movement of that joint. You may have some morning stiffness, but it wouldn't last longer than 30 minutes.
Okay.
So that 30 minutes is kind of a magical cutoff. More than 30 minutes, you think about a rheumatologic arthritis, something like that. We used to always say that, oh, arthritis is for older people, and we're not going to define old. But due to the post-traumatic osteoarthritis and just the load that a lot of people put on their joints, we are seeing osteoarthritis, I would say, in people younger than we would have historically seen in the past.
So if my aches and pains wear off in the morning, that would be...
It could be osteoarthritis. It could be a menagerie of things.
Right.
So,
but if it persists, then it's probably rheumatoid.
I would start leaning towards something different.
Yeah.
And rheumatoid arthritis would be one example.
Okay.
So,
yeah, the other possibility is that there's some other pathology going on in the joint.
Right.
Say you have a meniscus tear that may not resolve after 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
So we just, if it persists throughout the day, then we start looking for some other underlying cause. And there's a whole list of things
right.
that could be.
Well, I've just come to recognize that waking up sore is part of aging.
Right. And probably as you start moving and
yeah.
you take
mm-hmm.
a warm shower
yeah.
and you do some stretching and some mobility, you're fine.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we're talking about with people who may have osteoarthritis. And of course, osteoarthritis is on a spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be very minor, it could be major. And again, there's no correlation with what we see on plain films or on imaging and your symptoms. So just because you have bone on bone, and you can see me doing air quotes, all the listeners can see me doing air quotes, that doesn't mean that you have, you know, terrible pain. Similarly, there are people who radiographically have very little arthritic changes and they have a lot of pain. So the imaging is just one thing physical therapists consider when they're evaluating a patient with osteoarthritis.
But the pain's a priority here.
Correct.
For the patient.
Pain is a priority.
Pain is a priority. And interestingly, that's something that this article looked at that we brought today. They looked at pain, mm-hmm. function, and quality of life. So, and those are things that patients, I would say, in the big picture, really care about. So this was a systematic review of 35 randomized controlled trials. So they looked at all these different papers that looked at patients with osteoarthritis. These are not patients that had total knee replacements, patients that just had OA. And they had about 4,000 patients. And what they looked at is what is most helpful short-term, less than 12 weeks, and long-term, greater than 12 weeks, in improving pain, function, quality of life. And they looked at aerobic exercise, they looked at resistance exercise, and they looked at the combo meal of aerobic exercise plus resistance exercise. And the take-home message for the big picture of this, with the improving pain, they found that the combination in short term of using resistance exercise as well as aerobic exercise was most helpful for patients to mitigate their pain in that short term time frame. So in the big picture, for most of these things, whether it was short term or long term, it seemed that the combo meal of doing a little bit of both was most helpful. And to me, it makes sense. And Lori, you can chime in here. It's, you know, resistance training and aerobic training work on kind of two different approaches to managing the pain. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. Yeah. So aerobic exercise helps perfuse the joint. It helps bring blood flow to the area. It tends to be gentler on your joints, mm-hmm. depending upon whether you're doing weight-bearing or non-weight-bearing aerobic exercise. So it's not just aerobic exercise, yes or no, but it's also a matter of what aerobic exercise you pick and also what strengthening you pick. Are you picking a weight-bearing exercise, such as squats and lunges, or a non-weight-bearing exercise, such as straight legs? So again, the devil's in the details, mm-hmm. in terms of how you piece this together, and that's where the art of physical therapy comes in and the decision-making of the physical therapist in conjunction with the patient's exam and their preferences.
Right.
So aerobic exercise would look like what? Running, biking?
Oh, probably not running for okay. someone with knee OA, but...
Biking is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Swimming.
It could be on a recumbent bike, an upright bike. We mm-hmm. see, Lori and I do a lot of biking, and we see all sorts of different bike designs on the bike path.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Cross-country skiing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
probably
cross-country
not
skiing.
Yeah, the classic.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Elliptical.
Elliptical would be great.
Water
aerobics class.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So there's a myriad of things to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then... Again, we kind of said, oh, no, not to running. Certainly not right out of the gate. But if people do well with that and they want to try an impact activity, running would be an example of an impact type activity.
Something mm-hmm. to try, gauge your pain, your function, your quality right. of life, and adjust accordingly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And when we talk about resistance exercise, mm-hmm. you mentioned weights.
Mm-hmm.
I think of the bands as mm-hmm. something that I see an awful lot now.
Yep, bands work nicely for home exercise programs mm-hmm. when people don't have a lot of weights at home. There are some limitations to bands, but in general, using them for a strengthening program at home is one of the best and least expensive alternatives. So if you can get to a gym, it typically allows you to work through a greater range of motion than the bands allow. So there's some benefit to that.
And potentially more load, depending mm-hmm. on where you okay. are in your resistance training
sure.
journey. Sometimes the bands simply don't load you enough, but they're a mm-hmm. great place to start.
Yeah.
So this study from the Journal of Orthopedic and Sports Physical Therapy, taking a look at osteoarthritis in the knee and studying the long-term and short-term effects of aerobic and resistance exercises, finds short-term and long-term a combination of both can improve both the quality of life, your functionality, as well as, what was the other one?
Decreased pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Decreased pain.
But again, as Lori said, the devil is in the details.
Yep.
So my rehab program for osteoarthritis might look entirely different than Lori's rehab program for osteoarthritis, depending on what our joints can tolerate. So that's why it's not a one size fits all.
And that's why you probably can't handle it yourself and would need a specialist, a physical therapy expert to direct an individualized program.
So, yeah, and it's so helpful when a patient comes in and they can say, running really bothers me. Yep. However, biking seems fine. And so to be a little bit of a detective, I guess, when you bring that information to your physical therapist is very helpful.
Yeah.
Physical Therapy Sisters, answering your questions today at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk at WPR.org. And we'll start with Dave in Madison this morning. Dave, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm a little tired and sore. I just got off a couple hours of pickleball. So actually, my question is, I've started to develop I can never pronounce it properly, contracture in my hand.
Dupuytren's.
Thank you. And it's really bothering both hands, but the biggest problem I have is my right hand, because I have a trouble gripping my pickleball paddle. I'm not necessarily asking for direct advice. You have an appointment with a specialist at the end of the month, but I've never had a problem like this before, and I was just wondering if you can give me some ideas as to what sort of treatment or exercises or whatever I might be facing here.
Dupuytren's is a really challenging problem to deal with. We don't understand a lot about why it happens. There are some known reasons for it happening, but for the most part, it seems to come on sort of what we would call idiopathically in many people.
Is this where you can't?
Right, where you start getting a contraction of the connective tissues in the palm of your hand. Your
so
hand
it starts to
starts to contract into, you know, sort of a claw-like appearance, if you will. So, you know, typically the physical therapy interventions we would use, like stretching and so on, don't work very well for this type of contraction. So they usually require a specialist, a hand specialist. Mm-hmm. And that's where I would go at this point. It sounds like Dave is seeing a specialist at the end of the month. Mm-hmm. And because this is a really unique kind of condition, I would absolutely just follow the lead of that. And it,
No.
You didn't have anything to add.
I did, but I interrupted you, and I'm trying really hard not to interrupt you.
This was part of the conversation, by the way, before the show started.
It's okay.
About
go
two
ahead.
Sisters and how they talk almost in concert.
Right,
That's how I would describe it. So you can stop biting your lip, Jill, and you can just let it out.
So, but you were alluding to a certified hand therapist, correct?
Yes.
Right, which can be an occupational therapist or a physical therapist, which is an interesting area where we kind of cross in our Venn diagram.
Sure.
So, yeah, I would definitely do that. There may be an injection down the road for Dave. There may be a surgery down the road. It's usually your ring finger and your pinky, I think, is a little bit more common. But yeah, we don't know why you get them. Mm. And it's interesting that Dave plays a lot of pickleball and it's in both hands.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just from gripping that pickleball paddle per se.
It's not overuse.
It's not something that happens as overuse, and it's not anything you have control over, anything that you have done in your past.
Correct.
It's really what
we would call
idiopathic, unknown.
Yeah.
Dupuytren's?
Dupuytren's contracture.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Dave, I hope that helps. And follow up after you see the specialist. Let us know how you're doing. Thank you for the call.
Thanks, Dave.
We'll go to Barbara in Glenwood, Iowa next. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. Well, talking about knees, unfortunately, 3 weeks ago today, in the heavy rain, I tripped over a curb, took a hard fall, and my kneecap is fractured.
Oh.
So, That was the easy part, almost simple, because the orthopedic doctor said he'd prefer not to do surgery, put me in a leg brace for at least 6 weeks now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now my question is this. I refer to this with my friends as if you were visiting a dungeon and you saw torture devices, this should be in it. This would be one of them. And so... Do you ladies have any suggestions for me using this effectively because he wants it on for probably 6 weeks bending my knee.
Yes.
And using it so that I can get a good night's sleep, not be in real discomfort from the brace itself.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is a big challenge. So Barbara has a patellar fracture, that kneecap, and it's probably what we call non-displaced. In other words, it'll knit back together as long as we let it be quiet for 6 weeks. That's why she can't bend her knee for 6 weeks, is we don't want to bend it. We want that to knit together. So having your knee straight for 6 weeks in an immobilizer brace is so challenging. It's not easy. So I don't disagree with Barbara that it probably is something you might see in a dungeon. Mm-hmm. So things you can do is you can do a lot of ankle pumps or wiggling of your ankle to move some fluid around. You could elevate your leg, so changing positions often is going to be really good. You can do some glute sets where you'd squeeze your gluteal muscles. Those would all be helpful things.
And your weight bearing, you're walking with it?
I am able to do that. I avoid that. I mostly elevate.
Okay. So why are you avoiding walking?
I felt at the end of the day that there was more discomfort in the actual knee, if not some pain, and so I thought maybe I was doing harm.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think so. So the issue is, you know, you think about your kneecap, but everything around your knee is being immobilized, and in particular, the big joint, the tibiofemoral joint, your big knee joint, the one that they typically replace when you do a knee replacement. The only way it gets its nutrition is by weight bearing or by movement. So you have no movement. You're not allowed to move. So the only way those joint surfaces are going to get nutrition is by weight bearing, which means you have to walk. Now, if it's painful to walk, maybe you need an assistive device. Maybe you need a crutch. Maybe you need walking poles. Maybe you need a walker to offload some of the weight. But I think if you're going to recover from this effectively and not have a really painful joint when you're done, is you have to be weight-bearing. And I don't know what the plus-minus of a gentle quad set is, but, boy, I would love to see you slightly moving that kneecap. It is embedded in that tendon. I don't think you're going to displace it by doing a Mm-mm. quad set, but your kneecap is going to get scarred down, mm-hmm. and you're going to have a real mess when you're done if you can't do a little bit of mobilization of the kneecap. So I'd check with the surgeon and see if you can't see a PT to get some guidance on what you can and can't do.
What's this quad set you're talking about?
That's where
about?
You tighten your thigh muscle.
Okay.
So your patella, your kneecap, is embedded in the tendon of your quadricep. And so when your knee bends and straightens, it glides over the end of the femur bone. And if you could see the anatomy of your kneecap, it looks like it's embedded in saran wrap. There's so much connective tissue. If that doesn't move for 6 weeks, she's going to feel like she has saran wrap around her knee. So I'd like to see that patella moving a little bit via some quad sets.
Well, I was just wondering, after 6 weeks of not being able to move any muscle, starting to move that again, I would imagine might be the most arduous process in this whole thing.
Without a doubt. I mean, I'm old enough that I used to see people immobilized for 6 weeks after an ACL reconstruction, and getting their motion back was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. And painful, too,
and
right?
Painful. It's really very painful. Right. But I'm really worried about her articular cartilage, weight bearing for 6 weeks.
Right. So we're thinking Barbara might want to keep moving.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And the other thing is, I'm guessing she's going to see her doctor in 3 weeks. She's halfway through this immobilization period. You will want to have physical therapy set up the day you can start moving that knee.
Right.
Because you don't want to call at that point and have a 2 week wait. She's going to want to be getting that bad boy going.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara, thank you so much for the call. I am sorry about your slip and fall, and I hope it ends up all right and we could help a little bit today. Thank you. Sumner emailed us. Sumner is 74 years old, bikes 10 miles a day, is up to 1,500 miles this year so far. What are the health benefits of Sumner's regimen, and what are the risks here?
Wow, the health benefits. So consistently getting some cardiovascular activity every day is fantastic. Sumner's 74, is that right?
Yep.
So there's some balance that comes with this. So Sumner will be using their core to stabilize. There's some reaction time depending on where Sumner is biking. So there's a ton of benefits to doing that. I would say something that might be good to do is to mix up the route a little bit. And I'm kind of laughing at that because Lori and I bike the same route every week.
Right by my house.
There's a tremendous amount of research out there on the benefits of being outside.
Yes.
And so getting outside and just having to be alert. So you have to turn your head to look behind you. You have to turn and look left and right when you're crossing a street. You have to look up, down. Your vision, your line of sight changes from farther away to closer. So all that novelty that it takes to ride a bike, you know, successfully and safely, those are all incredibly good skills.
Right. Wait, don't even think of that, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something that comes with the process, with the exercise itself. Right. But then if you were to take that away, what you would be letting to start to atrophy would be a lot more than just your muscles.
Oh, all those things that Lori mentioned, you would never get on a stationary bike.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great example, yeah. Sumner. Thank you for the email.
Oh, and he said, what are the risks?
Yeah.
Getting hit by a car would be number one.
Wear the helmet.
Right. Exactly. Stay on bike trails. Right. Be super alert. Yep. Have a light. Have flashing lights. Wear bright colored clothes.
Wear a road ID or something like that. Yep. Have your phone with you. Yep. Let somebody know where you're going.
And if you bike year round, you know, black ice.
Yes. Lori versus the ice.
Lori versus the ice. The ice one.
Can Sumner overdo it, though? Is there too much? Or how do you know when you've gone too far? Jill's shaking her head. No.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a very structured program that Sumner does all the time. So I'm guessing
because
their body is very used to it. Very used to it.
Yep.
So pretty predictable.
Mm-hmm. But if I was to start from 0 miles a day to 10 miles a day, that might be...
Depending on your skill level, that could be too much.
Oh, yeah.
For some people, it could be fine. Yeah. Again, that's the whole, like, where it's the relativity of it.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned balance as well, and that's what we talked about last time, preventing falls
Absolutely.
As you get older and how prevalent they become as you get older, and things like balance and awareness and perception. Those are all things you find on a bike ride without thinking twice.
Absolutely. There's a gentleman in Indiana. I saw him interviewed. He's 98 years old, and he's an avid biker. He holds the U.S. record for his age category of speed per 1 hour. He rode 22 miles in an hour.
What? Whoa.
And somebody asked him, like,
downhill?
Right? I know. I'm like, wow. And somebody asked him what his recommendations were. And he's like, well, it's always good to hang out with younger people. But that's what he said. He said it keeps him going. And all those points that Lori talked about was, you know, it helps my balance. It helps this. It helps that. And so those are all the things you don't think about that you get from being outside and interacting with an environment that's different than biking inside.
But the 98-year-old biker also brings up something else, the socialization of being outside and exercising and coming across other people and doing it with other people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And at a certain age, they're all going to be younger people.
Correct. At some point, that's what happens.
Isn't that the case?
That's what happens.
It's Physical Therapy Day today, and our guests are Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and partner at Start Strong Physical Therapy, professor at Rocky Mountain University of Health Professions. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, also at Start Strong Physical Therapy and a professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Answering your questions today about your aches and pains, your arthritis, your exercise, and sharing your stories as well at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll keep her moving next. I'm Lee Rayburn. having fun, if you can imagine it, talking about arthritis today, because if you get moving, you can get better. And when it comes to things like pain and functionality and quality of life, our experts are here to help you today. And you can ask your questions or share your physical therapy stories at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guests are Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum from Start Strong Physical Therapy, online at startstrongpt.com. And let's go to Gary in Eau Claire next. Gary, hi.
Hello.
How can we help you today?
I've been developing basically thumb arthritis for about a year, and it's really rough when I mountain bike. I've changed my handle grips. I'm in PT for it, and it's really not helping. I have thumb braces, so it looks like I'm probably going to have a shot that does whatever it does. And I understand. Well, you can tell me more about that. Also, I'm worried about the pain. They're really painful shots because the joint area is so small. And is there some way you can get around that?
So have you had shots in there before?
That was no.
Oh, that was no?
No.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So... It sounds like you have experience with shots and you're worried about the shots being painful. Typically, that's the next step for this. So sometimes the therapy is not enough to get you over the hump, especially if you're really active. So osteoarthritis at the base of your thumb is one of the most common sites of osteoarthritis. Surprisingly, a lot of people are surprised by that. They think of hips and knees, but the base of your thumb is one of the most common sites. So it's really important to take care of your hands throughout your life. But if it's your dominant hand and you're using it for a lot of things and you're mountain biking and this and that, sometimes the therapy isn't enough to overcome the loads you're placing on it. So sometimes you need that shot to calm things down so then the therapy can start to work. But otherwise, you're always playing catch up. The therapy is always lagging behind the loads you're placing on it in your daily activities. So, you know, we typically like to do that injection to sort of calm things down and jumpstart the process. You know, after that, you know, you're looking at
surgery.
Modifying your activities or surgery.
Mm-hmm. Is it a big needle?
No, it's not,
it's a big needle
because it's a small joint.
And
he's
usually they do inject a little lidocaine with it or prior to that. Mm-hmm. So that will be something that would be helpful for Gary. But it sounds like he's doing everything right. He's modified his handlebar position. He has braces, which is what we highly recommend for people with CMC arthritis. And it's carpal metacarpal. Part of it is because 70% of your hand function comes from your thumb.
Yes.
So it's so, so important. Our mother had the surgery for it after having multiple injections for it. And they do a little procedure where they actually take down a tendon and they create a spacer for that. And she had a really good outcome. She had it done, God, in her 70s.
Yeah.
So, and interestingly, she was one of six girls, and I don't know how many of those 12 thumbs got done, but several of them were done,
and they did pretty well. So, you know, you mentioned bracing, and, you know, it's not just bracing during mountain biking, but bracing during any high load activity. So maybe during the day you need that brace just to rest that joint a little bit because it's being overused all day long.
And
so,
I'd wear it at night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I feel that in my thumb. I can feel the soreness there and using it all day to write and on a mouse and to type and then to grab things in the kitchen in the evening.
Right.
What should I be doing so I don't have to have the shot?
Well, I would say... So, I mean, what do we know about preventing arthritis?
Exercise.
It's the classic exercise, eat right, and try to minimize the load. So that is using your other hand at times when you can.
Oh,
if you're,
I'm so right-hand dominant, though.
So you just have to retrain your brain, Lee. So your brain has this default motor program that says, reach for the gallon of milk with your right hand.
Every time.
It's just like, for those of us that are swimmers, training yourself to breathe to the opposite side of our preferred side.
Yes.
You can do the same thing. It's the same thing, and we're coming upon...
You're telling me it's all in my head.
I am. We're coming upon leaf raking and snow shoveling season.
Yes.
And you can train yourself to rake leaves the other direction, and you can train yourself to shovel snow the other direction. So just training your body to move in other ways is good for your brain as it is.
Because I don't have it in my left thumb. Mm-hmm. I don't feel it there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I feel it in my dominant hand.
Yeah. So now every time you reach for that gallon of milk in your non-dominant hand, you're going to hear me saying, Lee, use your other hand. Lori's in my
head. It's in your head. I know you are, Lori. Get out of my head.
And can I just say, for all of those that are left-handed,
So what is the shot then? Is that the corticosteroid injection?
Yeah, corticosteroid injection.
Just like they do in the knees. Mm-hmm.
And that would just create some anti-inflammation. Mm-hmm.
Anti-inflammatory process, calm things down within the joint. And then, you know, you kind of have to lather, rinse, repeat and start the rehab process over. But sometimes it's what you need to jumpstart good rehab because you just, as Lori said, can't get ahead of it. And that applies to all joints.
How long does that shot last?
Oh, it depends. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like some people are one and done. Some people are 6 months. So it's just so variable.
And for some people, you don't get the full benefit of the injection for 2 weeks.
Correct.
So
it ramps up.
You know, you're like 3 days. You go, it feels the same as it did. But it takes time for the cortisone to do its magic.
Gary, does that help? Are you going to ask for the lidocaine in the corticoid injection?
Yes, thanks very much, but I heard that it's still very painful even with the lidocaine.
Well, don't look.
Yeah.
Sometimes that helps.
Yeah. You know what they say, pay me now or pay me later. So you can get it all in one lump sum or you know.
Right. I mean, Gary, as much pain as you're having with your thumb, it's all relative. Maybe it won't be that bad for you.
That is a really great point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That get it over with now. It's one big pain now and save you the pain down the road.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Gary, thank you very much for the call. Judy in Green Bay called, couldn't stay with us. She says a downside of biking is that it's not a weight-bearing activity, so it doesn't promote bone density.
She's correct. Mm-hmm. She's 100% correct. So is swimming, similar to swimming.
Yep.
So you have to think about the activity. It's their cardiovascular. Is it weight-bearing? Does it improve bone mineral density? And so Judy's absolutely right. Biking doesn't offer enough loading to improve or increase bone mineral density.
So in order to increase bone mineral density, what should I be thinking about doing?
Doing some weight-bearing activities. Okay. So whether it's walking or jogging or doing some functional multi-planar movements, something like that. I live on top of a hill and there's a guy, I don't know who he is, but he comes up and down our hill. And one time he's side shuffling up our hill. And the next time he's lunging up the hill. And the next time he's zigzagging up the hill.
I got a guy.
You got a guy?
Yeah.
Same thing. Yeah, they're working on their bone mineral density. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what's
functional
happening.
Movement.
Mm-hmm. That's what's happening.
That's what's happening. So she's correct.
Well,
Judy's
now
correct.
All of a sudden this guy looks so smart to me.
Right.
There you go. 100%. See, it's all a matter of how you look at it.
Yep.
But, you know, Jill made a really good point, and that is just walking is insufficient. And we've said that many times on this show because you're loading your bones in the same way over and over and over again. You need odd forces, and that's the zigzagging, the backpedaling, the skipping, the lunging, all that stuff. Mm-hmm.
Well, now I gotta be the guy.
Right.
Yeah, now you're gonna be the guy.
So when you see those people, I see them at the gym sometimes. Mm-hmm. They'll on the track, they'll skip one and then they'll sidestep. There was a probably 85-year-old lady at the gym I belonged to the other day, and that's by God what she was doing. I was so proud of her. Mm-hmm, I almost brought a tear to my eye.
I wish more people knew that because it looks odd. Mm-hmm, that guy looks odd to me, but now that you've explained it, he looks like the smart one out there.
He's not going to fracture his hip when he falls.
Yep.
I might.
Exactly.
Unless I become that guy.
Judy is absolutely correct.
Yep.
So I'm glad she brought it up.
So again, it's a matter of matching the right activity to that patient. Now, you know, somebody may not be able to do weight bearing or skipping anything that's impactful, which would be great for your bones because mm-hmm. of their knee OA. Mm-hmm. So we have to work with the individual and figure out how to achieve bone density without annoying the joint. And again, that's where a PT comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Diane in Portage called, couldn't stay with us. She's been falling a lot recently. Can PT help out with balance and fall prevention, she asked. What are some examples of exercises you can do to improve your balance?
So physical therapists can absolutely help with falls and falls prevention. So the first thing is figuring out why Diane is falling. Is it dizziness? Is it a medication change? Is it weakness? Is it, you know, vision combined with weakness? So a physical therapist would look at that and see what from a muscle, range of motion, strength perspective Diane needed work on, and then they could address it. Mm-hmm. There's also multidisciplinary falls clinics. For example, UW Health has one where all sorts of disciplines, including physical therapy, a geriatrician, pharmacists are there, and it's kind of one-stop shopping, and they go through everything to help you determine why it is that you're falling.
So, and you know, Diane wanted to know some things she should do. You know, first of all, you have to distinguish static balance from dynamic mm-hmm. balance, and that is a lot of people stand on one leg when they brush their teeth. Great activity. That's great for static balance, but you also need dynamic balance, and that is if you're walking along and you have to suddenly change direction or you have to turn, can you stop and turn without getting dizzy, you know, or can you regain your balance if somebody bumps you while you're moving? So the prescription of what things you should do are again, like most things, pretty specific to what that individual needs. You know, if you go online and Google balance exercises, you can find 50 different exercises to do, and there's nothing wrong with any of them. It's just a matter of A, doing them, and B, figuring out which are the right ones for you.
Well, and as we talked about last time, Diane is far from alone. The older you get, the more likely it is you are to be susceptible to falling, mm-hmm. and the more dangerous falling can be. And that there are preventative measures that we all can take, but they should be individualized to some mm-hmm. degree depending on what your needs are.
Mm-hmm. There's I don't even know what I want to call it, a 2-hour window of time, I lost my word. There's something in the fall called Only Leaves Should Fall.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, it's a course. It's a course that PTs here do, Only Leaves Should Fall.
On people in the community.
They do assessments. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also the SAIL program at Oakwood, they have a program where they will send somebody into your house and do a home assessment for fall risk. So they'll look at lighting, at your floor surfaces, at doorways, at clutter, all kinds of things. And that's through, it's called SAIL, S-A-I-L, and it's out of Oakwood, and they do home assessments. Safe at Home, it's called.
And I would imagine any senior center would at least have mm-hmm. some sort of
connections.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Something that would help you out, Diane, and give you some direction.
Right.
But
yeah.
There's
another one on the east side. There's Ballroom.
Mm-hmm. Basics.
Ballroom Basics for Balance. Mm-hmm. BB4B.
Yep.
Which is another program for, say, to work on balance, and it's through ballroom dancing.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some ideas. I like that very much. You can do it through dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah emailed us to ask what the PT sisters think of the new step machine. That's NUSTEP. Mm-hmm. What is this machine?
So it's a machine where you sit on it. And it has, you know, if you think of like an elliptical that has a flat surface for your feet. Mm-hmm. So you sit and you put your feet up on these plates and you push them a little bit like a leg press. So you're alternately pushing them.
So it's like a stair climber, but it's a recumbent.
Recumbent. And then there's arms mm-hmm. that go with it as well. So a little bit like a recumbent non-weight bearing elliptical or Stairmaster.
Right. I would say it's the same position as a recumbent bike, but it's like alternating leg press, and there's arms that go with it. I love them. Yeah. My gym has some, and it's really nice to get on them. The seat swivels 90 degrees, so you don't have to lift your legs over it.
Oh,
right.
They're nice. So it's a good activity for people if they can't do cardiovascular activity in weight bearing because of balance issues, things like that.
Mm-hmm. And you also get that weight bearing, like we talked about for Barbara, who, you know, has limited weight bearing because of her patella fracture, or if you have arthritis or whatever and you can't be full weight bearing, you can be partial weight bearing because you're pushing and you can set the resistance for how much pressure you put on it.
They're great.
Jill Tyne Brody, Lori Tyne Nissenbaum, our guest for Physical Therapy Day, inviting you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. Lori emailed us. She was recently diagnosed with stage 3 pelvic organ prolapse. She's seeing a pelvic floor PT next month. Do you think PT can really help with this issue, or will surgery probably be in Laura's future?
It's a great question. So there is an area, a subspecialty of physical therapy that work in pelvic floor dysfunction in both men and women. So stage 3 is fairly significant. I think stage 4 is the worst. So starting with the most conservative thing and seeing a physical therapist is a great strategy for her. Even if she ends up having surgery, she will be so much farther ahead because she's already started basically the rehabilitative process. And a lot of the exercises and activities that she will be doing with her pelvic floor physical therapist, she will have to do afterwards anyway. So those are all, it's really good for her to see this person and get some ideas about what she can be doing. And it's hard to say,
right?
You know, it's hard to predict, but it's absolutely the right first step for her.
This is where you should start, Laura.
Right.
Absolutely.
Thank you for the email. Anne emailed us, can you explain stem wave therapy, when to use it, and if it is a substitute for knee replacement?
Stem wave. I've not heard of stem wave therapy.
So there's electrical stimulation. Mm-hmm. There's
shockwave therapy. Yeah.
I don't know what stem wave would be. But
yeah, I've not heard of that.
So in the meantime,
knee replacement, what kind of therapy would it be?
So knee replacement is the surgical procedure of going in and fixing those joints.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think it's basically comparing a conservative management to a surgical management. And my best guess is in and of itself that a passive treatment like that probably isn't going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, generally not. Sometimes it's an adjunct. Sometimes there are some modalities you can use that decrease your pain. And if it decreases your pain to the point where you can then exercise, which is really the tried and true treatment for osteoarthritis, then absolutely. But it's not going to be a substitute for any of those things.
And thank you for the email. We'll go to Jim and Coleman next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. How are you doing?
Well, I'm recovering from plantar fasciitis, something I've never had before. And it seemed to happen after a week where I was very busy doing some cycling and walking. And I've gotten some exercises, and it's getting better. So I have no complaints. But I'm just trying to figure out how to balance being active again versus not re-injuring myself.
Mm, boy.
Okay.
Yeah, isn't that a good question?
Yeah, so that's perfect. It sounds like you've seen somebody, you maybe got some exercises to do. I would say that the return to activity is going to entail looking at your shoe wear, making sure you have good shoes, looking back on the week or that time period when you were doing a lot of cycling and a lot of walking, and just, for lack of a better term, walk that back. So going back to your previous level of activity that was not irritating to that, and working your way slowly back into that. You're going to want to start back at an activity level that's lower than what it was before, but gradually work your way up. an easy rule of thumb is that you need to be able to do the same activity at the same level for 3 sessions in a row before you increase. So, you know, say you were doing a certain amount of cycling and walking on a day that stirred this up. Just because you go back and you walk and cycle one day and it doesn't stir things up doesn't mean you can go back the next day and do it again. You have to work back into it slowly. And again, making sure you have good shoe wear on and that you're continuing to do your exercises.
So were you walking in your biking shoes?
Yeah, you know, what happened is one day when I was cycling, I got a slow leak. And I have an e-bike that I try to ride with, but I use the motor as a way to try to quickly get home before I was on the rim. But I ended up walking home, and they weren't my typical nice shoes. So that wasn't I walked maybe 50 minutes in some shoes that really weren't.
Okay.
Well, there you go.
So that poked the bear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're pushing a heavy bike because
right,
he's pushing an e-bike.
Bike.
So,
right.
So that was probably causative. So that's great. So you have something that really triggered you. So, yeah, those are all really good points. I just envisioned you walking in biking shoes and doing a whole lot of biking, and maybe his foot was in a weird position. Mm-hmm. But, no, that's a really good causative factor.
Yep.
Hopefully you won't have to do that again.
Exactly. Hope
that's your goal.
Plantar fasciitis, that is the tightness and pain at the bottom of the foot.
Most people, it's really painful first few steps in the morning because the plantar fascia gets tight overnight, and then you go and put your foot down and it splays and gets all stretched out. Lori likes a night splint. That's the research has shown that's very, very helpful because it holds you in a little bit of a stretched position. She doesn't have any stock in it, but the
Darko
brand, she likes the Darko brand. It's D-A-R-C-O, and it's a D-R-K.
White. No, D-A-R-C-O,
yeah,
and
I've
it's
seen
white
those.
And blue, and it goes on the top of your foot rather than behind and underneath because that's really uncomfortable.
Right.
So, yeah, that tends to work really well. But I think, you know, Jim made a good point. He did a really unusual activity, and sometimes that's enough to stir the pot. And then when you try to go back to your regular activities, it just perpetuates it. So you have to cut back and then work your way back up again.
I've seen foot rollers, too, as like a bottom-of-the-foot massager.
Yep.
Is that a preventative, or is that a...
Not some people just like them because they feel good.
They feel good.
They feel good, yeah. So the big thing is the plantar fascia stretching and, you know, typically the night splint so that plantar fascia isn't in a contracted state all night. You know, the plantar fascia is kind of like the foot equivalent of the Dupuytren's in the hand.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So
connective tissue.
Open and close the show with that same hand and foot.
Well, and I was also thinking about how we wake up in the morning with these aches and pains that you mentioned, this plantar fasciitis problem, with, and how we wake up in the morning with osteoarthritis pains and how they tend to wear off in the morning. But that just speaks to what we do at night, right?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Your joints like movement. Mm-hmm. So they like to be mobile. And so to be immobilized and kind of be in one position all night long is not good. And Barbara with her knee immobilizer is a great example. She's been immobilized for 3 weeks and she's miserable.
Yeah.
And yeah. So your joints don't like to be still.
There is no greater evidence of the problem of inactivity than when you spend 6 to 8 hours in bed and wake up in the morning sore.
So, and you know, people will say, oh, I had the flu and I laid down for 3 days and I'm so achy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it probably isn't flu related. It's probably related to the fact that they were stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
So. I find that very profound for some reason.
Yeah.
That the best evidence for inactivity is waking up in the morning all sore.
Right. Exactly.
If only I could stay moving all night long, I'd wake up feeling fresh and new.
Interestingly, people who toss and turn more during the night do feel better in the morning than people who are those really sound sleepers who never move.
Well, I tell you what, I'll give it a try and let it know how it goes.
Or just drink a lot of water
before you go
to bed. So
you just get up all night.
Exactly. Those are your choices.
Solutions from the PT sisters.
There you go.
Thank you both, as always, for joining us. Looking forward to catching up with you again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jill Tine-Nissenbaum and Lori Tine-Brody from Start Strong Physical Therapy online at startstrongpt.com. Lori Tine-Brody is also a professor at Rocky Mountain University of Health Professionals. Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News.